Shalom and welcome back to A Light Under the Nations. In addition to being one of my favorite columnists, Mr. Daniel Pipes is an internationally syndicated columnist. He's a frequent contributor to nearly every major media outlet. He's a distinguished fellow at the Hoover Institution of Sanford University. And much, much more. Rather than wasting the time singing his accolades, let's just get right to it. Mr. Pipes, I want to discuss the Biden visit to Israel. It's really like being discussed throughout the country. Everybody's consumed with what maybe it seems like is a historical turning point in U.S.-Israel relations. Is that true? Is this a turning point?
Thanks for the kind words. I think it's too early to assess whether it's a turning point or not. We experienced something analogous to this in 2009, and the Obama administration backed down. Whether this is a new, stronger effort in the same direction to push Israel around, to have a fight, or whether it will be aborted as it was in 2009, I just don't know. All I can say is it came as a complete surprise to me, as well as I think to almost everybody, because it looked like the Obama administration had learned its lesson from 2009 and had reverted to business as usual. So I'm perplexed. I don't know what this means at this point.
Well, I think what's so perplexing also is that this is all about building permits that were issued for a neighborhood in Jerusalem called Ramat Shlomo. It was not part of the building freeze. It's already full of Jews, and it's never been on the table. The Palestinians never even asked for it. So how has the government of Israel issuing these permits to build homes in our nation's capital so deeply offended the Clinton, Biden, the State Department, Obama? Well, I mean, to use this as a facade, how could this be? How could they even get angry at such a thing?
I think the most remarkable thing is it isn't even what was Jordanian Jerusalem. It was no man's land. I think you answered your own question when you pointed out that it was a facade. It was a search to find some issue to have a fight. It was a perfectly trivial issue. But once you're looking for a pretext, you can find whatever is at hand. And apparently it's reasonably convincing. A number of major editorialists and columnists have spoken out in favor of it, and only one Democrat in Congress, so far as I know, has spoken up against it. So it seems to have convinced a number of people that it was a real issue and that the Israeli government really did something terrible.
So this wasn't a diplomatic.
Again,
go ahead.
I just don't know if this a month from now will look like a major turning point or will have been another thing that we've passed, or a year from now. It's just too early to, all I can do is speculate.
So this was not a diplomatic misstep. It wasn't a bad mood, and it seems like it was a deliberate tactic meant to weaken the U.S.-Israel relationship. I mean, he used the word condemn. The State Department used the word condemn. They didn't even use that regarding Ahmadinejad murdering dissidents in Iran. A lot of Jews are really getting nervous in America, and they wouldn't say so, but they are. 58% of voters now say Israel is an ally of the U.S., while last August it was 70%. That's a pretty dramatic decrease. Is there reason for them to be nervous?
Well, I don't think that, I wouldn't ascribe that dramatic change in numbers to this little tempest in a teapot. I think the Israeli standing is very high. There was just a poll that showed that Americans support Israel over its enemies by a ratio of 8-1, 57-8%, I think it was, or 7%, 57-7. I think it is a reflection of the net roots, the far left origin of Obama himself and many of his aides. However, there are plenty of strengths that Israel has in this country, starting with this 8-1 ratio. And although Democratic members of Congress have not spoken up, I think this is not a popular issue. This is not what members of Congress who are in trouble already need. There are plenty of people in the Democratic Party who don't like this. So I'm fairly optimistic that this will also, as in 2009, end up a cropper and not lead to a major shift in U.S.-Israel relations. But it's just a hunch. It's not something that I can argue on facts at this point.
Well, we certainly hope that's the case as well. But, you know, the U.S. and Israel, they came to an agreement that disagreements should remain quiet. And, you know, friendships are built on trust. And at this point, what do you make of that true status? What would you advise Israel to do? Because it seems like our friendship is, we get attacked constantly. We're treated like a fiend or a foe, whereas Assad or Chavez or Ahmadinejad, real enemies that really want the destruction of America, are not treated with the same hostility. Is it in our best interest to get, you know, redefined as an enemy? What would you advise Israel to take? What strategy?
I think what Netanyahu did in 2009 was the correct approach. To stand tough on the essentials, but be accommodating on the unessentials. I see the 10-month freeze as an unessential, as a giveaway of not great import, but you know, standing firm on the really important points. And I would recommend a repeat of that this time. Yes, show some accommodation here and then, but not on principle, not on important things, just on something that you need to do in order to maintain, however unfairly, we have to maintain the U.S. alliance.
So, well, as you know, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, it was founded in 64, clearly not to liberate the settlements of 1967. And the administration making their centerpiece policy of the entire Middle East, the cessation of settlement policy, seems to be playing into this lie. And you were just talking about standing on principles. It seems like we in Israel, we should be really putting our foot down, not only for our best interest, but for America's best interest as well, taking the lead. Do you feel that the American public, the Congress, would back that up, would respond to us standing in principle, possibly against the administration, or would they feel that they need to stand with the administration and Obama regardless?
I think if it's a confrontation between a reasonable Israel and an unreasonable Obama, I think Israel come out quite well. Obama does not speak for the majority of Americans in looking for a fight with Israel. That's a far left position. It is where he's coming from and his aides, but it's not the majority position in this country. So I don't think it's likely to prevail. But again, could be wrong. You know, we've just seen with the healthcare bill that they're willing to push their agenda regardless of the cost. And many, many observers think that this healthcare bill will have a tremendous toll on the Democratic Party. And yet they've persisted nonetheless against major opposition, a major sustained strong opposition. So it is conceivable they'll do the same in the case of other issues, including relations with Israel. But that is not normally the way politics operates, so it's not something that I would predict.
Right. So you don't feel the American public also is buying this line that's being fed that this dispute right now is actually threatening American servicemen. It's difficult for me to even put that together how that's the case, but I understand that there's various methods that the administration is getting this concept out there.
Well, the major approach to cooling relations with Israel, the major approach of the United States to cool relations with Israel, has been always from 1948 on to say that working, having close relations with Israel, working with Israel, is costly in terms of the region, whether it be the Soviet Union or oil or relations with other states of the region. The line always is Israel, good relations with Israel is too costly for us, and we must cut them back. Over the decades, that line has lost over and over and over again, and the U.S.-Israel relationship has gone from strength to strength and is indeed much closer today than it was at the beginning. So it'll take a lot of work to undo it. Obama has shown in the health care bill that he will, if it suits him, put in a lot of work and pay a very heavy price to attain his goal. So, again, it's conceivable. It could happen. But it is not the logic of normal politics.
Well, we got the last question here, and this is really a fundamental one because this is the attack that's, you know, I just saw a clip that was on C-SPAN that was very concerning. Why is it in the U.S.'s interest to stand with Israel against really much of the European Union, the United Nations, the Muslim world, 23 Arab countries? There is a compelling argument to make that, yes, perhaps there is justice on Israel's side, but on a pragmatic, practical level, they've got the oil, they've got the terrorists, they have the European Union. Why is it in the U.S.'s interest to stand strong with Israel?
Well, again, that's the same question that's been around for decades, for six long decades. And it was all the more compelling in the late 1940s when Israel was a weak state, as opposed to today when it's an economic dynamo, a military powerhouse, and so forth. But the answer then and now has been that Israel is the country in the region, this volatile, important region, the center of the world in some sense, through which communications go, from which energy is extracted, which is close to many other important places. It has always been a good idea for the United States to have a close strategic ally. We have other allies, such as Saudi Arabia and at one point Iran, but they're not strategic allies, they're tactical allies. We don't have a profound agreement of purpose with them. We have common interests at any given point. With Israel, as with, say, Great Britain, there is a much deeper strategic alliance, which is based on values, goals, and it sustains itself over long periods of time. And it's very helpful for the United States to have what's sometimes called an unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East. We have a much greater influence on the region via Israel than we would have without Israel. If there were no Israel, it would be much harder for the United States to effect its will in the Middle East than it is today, or has been for the last 60 years.
Well, I certainly hope that the administration and the public keeps that global perspective in mind, and we're very grateful to you over here in Israel that you're on the front lines really getting these ideas out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to chat.
Now, the other night, I met a man that I really should have known a long time before. He is tremendously connected, knows pretty much every Jew in Israel, and is a doctor, not a medical doctor, which means he's just spilling forth with information. His name is Mike Cohen. Shalom, Mike.
Good afternoon.
So I wanted to ask you a couple questions. You know, this show we've been talking a lot about what's happening between the U.S. and Israel. It seems historical as far as the deterioration in the relationship. Recently, as we know, Biden was here, and he just erupted in fury at Israel that we built in our capital. What is this about, in your estimation?
It's a complex question.
Sounds like something a doctor would say.
There are different levels of understanding in international diplomacy. And for a plan that was designed 3, 4, 5 years ago to get approval by some subcommittee locally and then be announced by the Minister of Interior within moments of the landing of the plane of a vice president of the United States that's not known to be friendly to Israel, raises a tremendous amount of questions. There are conspiracy theorists that can go on and yarn and develop all kinds of ideas about what really happened and why it happened. And then we could look at history. And if we look a little bit at history, we can see that it's not the first time that Israel and the United States have come to disagreement at times where it looks like they should be in agreement. The United States Congress passed, according to American law, which is passed by Congress, not by the president, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and the embassy of the United States should be in Jerusalem. The president of the United States, for several years now, in all the campaigns, just like they take the ethanol pledge when they're in Iowa, they have to take the Jerusalem pledge when they're talking to AIPAC. Both candidates, every election.
They have to take the Jerusalem pledge, even though possibly they half the people in APEC don't take the Jerusalem pledge?
They will not. They have to take the Jerusalem pledge. If they do not pledge to move, any Democrat that does not pledge to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem upon becoming president will not get the Democratic vote.
Really?
Check history.
Forget history. I'm not talking about history. I'm not talking about I'm talking about right now. Jews knew where Obama stood. They knew what he was about. And Jews don't really...
He took the pledge. Excuse me, he took the pledge.
I know he took the pledge, but could it be that he was possibly projecting what he thought, well, these are Jews, they should be pro-Israel. A pro-Israel stance should be to take the Jerusalem pledge. That's what they would want from me. But he didn't have quite the insight into the pathology of the Jewish mind that's the result, as we discussed last night, of 2,000 years of persecution and exile. And he didn't understand that he doesn't need to take the Jerusalem pledge for the Jewish vote.
If a Bible-believing, a Bible-studying Christian like George W. Bush did not move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, Barack Hussein Obama is going to move the American Embassy to Jerusalem.
Right.
But he still gets up in front of AIPAC, and he has the gall to take the pledge, and the Jews applaud him and vote for him.
Right. Even though they know that he's pulling the wool over their eyes and that he's not going to do it. But,
he's not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. You know he's lying.
Right.
It's not wool. It's an emperor without any clothes.
I guess it's just, if they know he's lying, he knows he's lying. They know that he knows that they know. Why even bother playing the game?
Which is why I say it's like the ethanol pledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same exact thing as the ethanol pledge. Every presidential candidate has to take the ethanol pledge when they go to Iowa.
Right.
The same thing. It's part of American politics. There's certain areas you have to take. You have to say certain things during your speech. Otherwise, you will get booed.
So, Mike, so tell me then what we have in store for U.S.-Israel relationship. Is it on the downhill? Is it not looking good?
No, I think it's very much like what happens in a family. You kiss, you make up. A lot of families have rules about you don't go to sleep before you do certain before you make up. The people who were speaking in certain tones are already downplaying the discussions, at least on the Israeli side. The American administration is confusing at the moment.
Well, listen, Mike, Israelis do that. It's in their best interest to. But we saw what happened with Israel and Turkey with Erdogan, where an entire alliance relationship of decades was flushed down the toilet because within a week, Turkey was already doing military exercises with Syria and making alliances with Iran. And what the heck happened? We just finished Passover. We saw what happened. Joseph was the viceroy of Egypt, one of the most powerful men in the whole world. And then all of a sudden, a new pharaoh arose. And that was...
Correct. And that's history. That's what history teaches us.
So I'm not so sure it's
what they do.
Look, it's all in the family. Look, we're going to kiss and make up.
No. Look at what he did today. Today he banned the words Islam and the word jihad from American military assessments. You can't use those words anymore in American military or strategic assessments.
Really?
That was in today Associated Press this morning. What's going on there is unexplainable. It's not going to be explainable to the American people. You're not talking about a rational decision-making process today. Congress is not going to stand for it. There are elections at the end of this year. America changes. Unlike all of the other viceroys in history, America has a new pharaoh every 8 years, you like it or not. It could be every 4 years. And every 2 years... the various different leaders switch around because Congress has elections. America is built to survive these things. America is built to change. It's the first country to have this kind of government, of leadership. And therefore, it will flip. The same way as you have a leadership that is friendly, you'll have a leadership that's not so friendly, a leadership that's a little bit more friendly. But the interest of the United States is to keep Israel alive and healthy. And happy. It's in the best interest of the United States, and that's what the American people know. 78% of the American people are pro-Israel. Only 6% of the American people are pro-Palestinian. Israel is the third most popular country in the American public eye, according to all the polls that were taken in recent months.
But, Mike, we
Canada,
know, though...
Great Britain and Israel.
America's so headed into a whole new era. The world is headed into an entirely new era.
Correct.
As far as, you know, China and Russia and are going to be emerging superpowers, and America just is not. And when there's this tremendous void and gap between the materialistic desires of the American people and what's being met, when there are breadlines even, and they say, why is this happening? Because we're fighting Israel's wars. This 78%, I'm not so sure that the American population, with the proper prodding, may go the same direction that so many others have and blame Israel and the Jews.
Oh, well, when you look at what's happening, Israel's popularity is at all-time highs when America's personal situation is at a low. America is a different place because of the religion. The religious base, the Christian base in America, is an evangelical base. It's no longer a Catholic base. It's a place that has true belief. It's a place that believes in Bible, and therefore the changes are going to be dramatic. You're 100% about the issues with Russia and China, but that also could work to Israel's advantage eventually, because Israel has very good relationships with China. It's the United States that has stopped Israel from selling a lot of technology to China.
Right, that's
so
true.
So as things change, as the movement towards a clash of civilizations takes place, Professor Huntington from Harvard, when he was talking about a clash of civilizations, he was talking about a clash of civilizations between West and East. What has turned out is it's becoming a clash of civilizations between East, West, and Islam. And that's a whole different ballgame. And the West and the East do not yet know how they're going to play this out.
I'm not
We're
quite following that, the West, East, and Islam thing.
Okay, you have three elements in the world.
Okay.
The East is China and Korea and so on.
Okay.
And the West was Europe.
Okay.
Europe had its fights amongst itself over the course of many years. Islam existed where Islam existed. Islam and Europe, which meant the Catholic Church, fought on a regular basis. Islam took over part of Europe, and then the Crusaders pushed back.
Okay, so
and
Mike,
Islam
we're
pushed
just,
back, and the Crusaders pushed back.
I apologize. We're running out of time right here.
Okay.
But I just want to ask you one question, leave it out there, and we're going to have you on the show again. Rather
sure.
than West and East versus Islam, could it possibly be West, East, and Islam versus Israel? Because that's the way it's looking to me. It's looking like Europe and the United Nations and the EU, and they're all joining forces, and America is standing in a crossroads, a moment of truth, where they have to decide where they're going to cast their lot. Is it going to be with numbers or with justice, principles, and truth? That's what I think is really happening.
Do you have a website, right, Ari?
Yes, thelandofisrael.com.
Okay. Fine. So I'm going to give you a graphic that illustrates exactly what you just said. Asia, Europe, and the East. It's an ancient map of the world. And right in the center of the world is Israel, and in the center of Israel is Jerusalem.
Right.
I'm not sure whether it's everyone against Israel or whether it's everyone against each other with Israel in the center of it.
Interesting. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and we will definitely have you on again. You're fun.
Thank you.
That was Mike Cohen. Always a fun and lively discussion with him. You can check out our archives of our radio shows and our television shows at www.thelandofisrael.com. Lots of exciting, fascinating, gripping stuff happening in Jerusalem, happening in Israel, happening in the entire world, and this is the place to hear about it. Shalom Aleichem.